You're listening to New England Public Radio News, and this is the shortlist NEPR's Week in Review. I'm Adam Frenier, and with us today in studio, Mike Dobbs, managing editor of the Reminder Newspapers, and on the line from Pittsfield, Larry Parnas, investigations editor with the Berkshire Eagle. Welcome to you both.
Hi, Adam.
Thanks, Adam.
This week, the Springfield City Council unanimously approved an order which says the city will not interfere with institutions that provide sanctuary to immigrants. The order is in response to Mayor Dominic Sarno's objections to the South Congregational Church taking in a Peruvian woman facing deportation and her American-born children as well. And before the vote on Monday, City Councilor Michael Fenton spoke before a packed City Council chamber.
That's why we're here. No mayor passes any edict telling any church what to do, particularly as it relates to sanctuary.
Larry, while Sarno has said Springfield is not a sanctuary city, the council sent a strong message to both the immigrant community and the mayor by taking this vote. What do you think about it?
You know, he can say it's not a sanctuary city, and that's certainly true. But, every church community, if it elects to provide refuge, can be a sanctuary. I thought the mayor's point about him acting to prevent the city of Springfield from feeling the consequences of any federal action just really doesn't fly, because there is no consequence to Springfield. The churches can do what they want. They're independent. It's not that the city has taken this action. It's a church that's taken this action.
Mike, you wrote about this in your column. This has been going on, this situation, for the last couple of weeks. Is it time for the decision makers in Springfield to move on to other business?
Well, I think that there are much more pressing items facing the city than having a single undocumented person in a church. I mean, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about one human being here. And I did ask the mayor's office this week if he was going to pursue the stripping of the tax-exempt status, which is something he talked about. The response I got was no further comment at this time. So I don't know where the mayor himself is going to go with this, especially after having Building Commissioner Steve Desoletz do a code enforcement check of the apartment and finding very, very minor things there that could easily be fixed. So she's living there legally as far as the building codes are.
You know, Mike, it's my understanding that the mayor doesn't have the power to strip its tax-exempt status. That belongs to the IRS, our favorite agency this time of year.
Well, yes, I believe that you're correct. It was an interesting move that he was making because it was so extreme. And I wanted to find out if he was going to be following this. And maybe he is, maybe he's not.
Also this week, the Massachusetts Senate announced it was going to look into UMass's planned acquisition of Mount Ida College in Newton. UMass plans to use the property so students from the Amherst campus could access internships and other training programs from Greater Boston employers. The plan would allow current Mount Ida students to finish their studies at UMass Dartmouth, about 50 miles away. And some senators say the purchase isn't fair to UMass Boston, which has its own set of financial challenges right now. Mike, UMass President Marty Meehan says no public money is going to be spent on this plan, so should lawmakers be looking into it?
Yes, I think they should. I think they should be challenging exactly the structure of the UMass system, that the idea that the flagship campus in Amherst is now going to have some sort of satellite in Newton, for goodness sakes. By the way, as a proud UMass grad, class of 1976, I don't understand why they're saying that these students who are from the Boston area need to go back there. An internship is an internship. And frankly, UMass Amherst's goal in Western Massachusetts should be and has been, supposedly, to build up the economy here.
Larry, as far as getting bang for one's buck, is this going to be worth it for this purpose, spending tens of millions of dollars to create this satellite campus, as it were, in Newton?
I think this is a land grab, pure and simple, and the internship thing is just a justification of it. I don't buy the argument that there's not public money here, because when they take out tax-exempt bonding, which is the plan here, I think the figure was $37 million plus borrowing, that all jacks up the fees at the flagship campus in Amherst. So, it is public money in the sense it's coming out of the pockets of the students who are going to be attending UMass down the road once this financing comes into effect and hits them. That's really pushed the cost of attending UMass up ridiculously high. I agree with Mike that it warrants a really close look. I think they just really wanted this campus. 72 acres, and then looked for a reason to explain it. And I don't understand if it's to help people who are UMass Amherst students work internships in Boston, you know, get them some rooms on Airbnb for a lot less money. I don't get what the educational purpose of the entire campus is if it's just to be the nearness of Boston.
Meanwhile, this week, a deal was announced between the Berkshire Museum and a yet-to-be-open California Museum co-founded by Star Wars creator George Lucas. Norman Rockwell's Shuffleton's Barbershop, valued at somewhere between $20 and $30 million, will be sold by the museum in Pittsfield as part of its controversial plan to help boost its endowment and fund renovations. Before the painting heads west, it will be loaned to the Norman Rockwell Museum in Stockbridge for up to 2 years. Don Bacci-Galupi, the founding president of the Lucas Museum, says Shuffleton's will fit in nicely with its collection.
It is one of the icons of 20th century storytelling and paint. Rockwell is certainly an artist that we have a great interest in and a great holding of works by. And I would say Shuffleton's Barbershop ranks among his greatest achievements as a painter.
Larry, many opponents to this sale are concerned about this work and others leaving the Berkshires. What's the reaction been like to this sale?
Boy, Adam, just listening to that fellow who is the founding director at the Lucas Museum, those words could have come out of the mouths of all of the people who had been calling for these works to be retained by the Berkshire Museum. Truly are, you know, landmark pieces of American art. I think as this story goes on, you've been covering it, Adam, very closely. We're 9 months in or so, almost 10. There's almost as many questions arise with every turn of the screw here. How much is this work going to be sold for? And with the group of art that is now set for sale in May, allowed by the recent Supreme Judicial Court ruling, are they going to possibly overshoot the $55 million cap that was set by that order? That's just one of the questions, and there are many, and people remain very unsettled about this.
Mike, should opponents take solace in the fact the painting will at least remain in the public eye, even though it will be in California at some point?
Well, that's my reaction. My reaction would be at least this is going to be something that people can see as opposed to going to a private collection. So I think they should take solace in that.
All right, Mike Dobbs with the Reminder Newspapers and Larry Parnas of the Berkshire Eagle, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Adam.
And thank you, our loyal listeners of the shortlist, NEPR's Week in Review. And remember, you can catch us at any time wherever you get your podcasts or at nepr.net/podcast. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is New England Public Radio.